When the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
What the hell happened to the America that I've known and loved? Right, we sent rockets to photograph the rectal passages of Jupiter, and the kids wind up in porno films. They violate the laws of Newton and Christ, and then we wonder why a bunch of bandits with towels on their heads have got us by the nuts.
A city rich in romantic oriental lore.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Baghdad, you must investigate Baghdad.
And learn a few of the facts you never knew before.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom. Once again, we're here to scrape the bullshit off the truth, as Sherman Skolnick used to say, and we're here to expose the state secrets that the ruling elite hope you don't learn. With this in mind, we're joined with a very exciting briefing here today by Greg Hallett and Stefan Grossman. Greg is the author of the book, Hitler Was a British Agent. He's been interviewed here before by myself. Today we're fortunate to be joined by Stefan Grossman, and we're going to delve further into this interesting subject and the truth about Hitler. So I want to welcome first Stefan. Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger, and as you too, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Greg. Hi, Lenny.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys on the line. I've been looking forward to doing this. Greg, you're... It's Sunday here in Canada, in Toronto. You're in New Zealand. It's Monday, and Stefan's in Germany, and so it's a real international call here. Stefan, do you want to proceed and co-host and explore this interesting subject with Greg, and I'll sit on the sidelines with my comments?
Wonderful. I'll try my best. You know, I'm a lawyer, Greg, and I have a background in legal history, investigating court corruption. Similar to Sherman Skolnick, I tried to, in my 11 years of that project, I tried to go back to the Civil War. That's where many things seem to start, 1861, 1865. One thing that is notable there is how the industrial powers took over, and some decades later, the country turned into a war machine. As a lawyer, I always try to, which is typical for lawyers, all lawyers do it when there's a case, try to develop a theory, a perspective, and I have two or three short sentences here that I just like to throw in at the beginning. I wrote it down because the wording is maybe more concise that way. Here's the quote that I wrote down, my own quote. Delving into the history of organized war crime, a key industry since the American Revolution, and more specifically since the Civil War then. Reportedly a Rothschild, and then a Rothschild-Rockefeller family business. Many call this the Illuminati. And you, in your book entitled Hitler Was a British Agent, I think it's coming out now in the second edition.
Yeah.
You have explored that masterfully. You critics have noted that you have been unable to produce so-called written documentation and have held that against you. However, one must point out right away that history, that the writing of history, consists not only in the compilation of written documents. The writing of history includes, of course, the compilation of all evidence that can be archaeological and that can be so-called oral history, that is, witness testimony from people who are surviving, or second-generation history of such type. And I understand that you have been speaking to sources from inside intelligence about this subject, about subject for 9 other books. You mentioned you would have material for 10 books.
That's right.
And reading your book, I have the impression, and possibly you would agree, that history in general, and history specifically with regards to Adolf Hitler, the German dictator, in 33 to 45, that history has been heavily tampered with and manipulated.
Yeah,
probably with regards to the question of who is the guilty party for wars, specifically for the Second World War. Would you agree that history is heavily manipulated?
It's absolutely heavily manipulated. Because Hitler was a British agent and the British supposedly won the war, they wrote history completely omitting that Hitler was their agent. And they trained Hitler to destroy Germany and to destroy the German military force after the war, and also to get Germany to fund Israel. Now, Lionel Rothschild, the second Baron Rothschild, he had written a letter, he was pressured to do it by Cham Wiseman, to the British Foreign Minister Balfour, and it was just a letter, and it was asking for British government support in 1917 for the creation of a state of Israel. Britain didn't want to fund it. They had their double agents set up. Joseph Stalin was a British agent, and Adolf Hitler. So what they did is they got Germany to attack England, and when it was about to take over England, it diverted all of its attacking force through Operation Barbarossa to Russia. So Germany was attacking on two fronts, that was absolutely going to lose the war. So it officially lost the war. Germany got the guilt for 6 million Jews dead.
Can I jump in here, Greg, right away with two notes?
Yeah.
Hold on, Stefan, hold on. Let's just let him finish his point, and then go ahead.
So Germany got the guilt for killing 6 million Jews, which Time magazine now recognizes as 1.1 million Jews. And then Germany funded Israel, funded the development of Israel, which happened between, it was established essentially between 1946 and 1948. And now we're finding that Germany is in some ways an industrial state for Israel. So the whole thing was an absolutely massive con. And then we find that Adolf Hitler was the grandson of Lionel Nathan Rothschild, 1808 to 1879.
Right.
So absolutely massive con. And Germany, you know, we're having second-generation guilt where the Germans are absolutely guilty about the war. And the people that should be guilty about the war are the international bankers and the Rothschilds and the British royalty and the British government.
Right.
It was a con. It was a con.
Now, this notion that Hitler is a Rothschild, that is one quarter of a Rothschild, that would mean Lionel and Nathan Rothschild had an illegitimate son, and that illegitimate son then later turned out to be the father of Adolf Hitler.
That's right.
Yep. So that notion actually is quite old, and the official historiography in that respect says that when Hitler became dictator, he hunted his home country, Austria, in order to have all birth certificates, et cetera, that could lead to any conclusions about that question destroyed and disappeared.
Yeah, that was a dollar shot.
Similar to what Bill Clinton did to disappear all evidence about the question and allegation that he is an illegitimate offspring of the Rockefeller family.
Which, to my knowledge,
is confirmed in oral history by members of the middle level of the Rockefeller family, in confidence.
While we're at it, maybe, Greg, do you want to just mention for people who are interested in the book, just give us where we're going to go delve into this, but the whole subject is just tremendously fascinating. Where can people get the book now?
www.hitlerwasabritishagent.com.
Good stuff. So www.hitlerwasabritishagent.com. It's a terrific book. Go ahead, Stefan. Let's delve further into this subject because it's just great. For instance, I know people want to know Hitler got out. He lived after the war. As I understand it from the book, he lived out his life in Spain.
That's right. Yep.
Stefan, you go ahead with your
I sort of have a few questions in mind. I just have to go step by step, Greg. Sorry for that. Normal way of going through this, though, I think it's momentous. And we were talking about Hitler as a member of the Rothschild family. I mentioned at the beginning the Rothschild family is reportedly the principal of this key war industry. So that would be a momentous clue right there.
Yep.
And the Rothschild family started here in Germany, in Frankfurt am Main, in Germany. One of their first clients, by the way, was a very wealthy German prince, the Landgrave of Hesse Cassel, in the 18th century, that is. And this was the prince who sold to England these so-called Hessian mercenaries for tremendous amounts of money. And that gave England in the American Revolution considerable strength against the Americans. And the profits of that were largely made by the Rothschild family. And that's how they basically launched their career into international financing of government and managed to establish their position as the leading force financially on the planet.
Yeah. Well, what the Rothschilds did is they're an international banking family, and they funded both sides of the war. And in order to keep wars going, they were constantly training double agents. So they'd get an agent from a disgruntled Austrian and then train him in England and then send him to Germany to become the head of Germany and to lead Germany into war. And then they created all the financial machinations to ensure that the German people wanted to back a fascist who was fronting as a socialist. And they did that by changing the gold standard, silver standard to gold, and recreating Germany's World War I war debt. And the price of a loaf of bread was 1 billion mark in 1923.
Mm-hmm,
People had to use a wheelbarrow to carry their money to go grocery shopping. It was a bit like Russia in 1989. You know, the ruble went from 20 rubles to the US to 2,000 rubles to the US. And people were walking onto trains with an incredibly large cabbage wrapped in newspaper, but it was their wallet.
Yeah, tough times. With all your research, Greg, do you or have you ever come across reports that to this very day, Germany is allegedly not governed by its constitutional government, but that there is a shadow government in Germany called the Reich Chancellor, which is the old title before 1945, and that this secret level of government has agreed to a treaty that Germany must pay reparations in secret until the year 2000 and I think 94. Have you ever come across that report?
Not exactly, but I'm aware that that is going on, and I'm aware that the shadow government thing is happening, and that
in Germany specifically.
I'm aware that Germany's constantly paying out to Israel. I'm aware that the number of Jewish deaths is a con, and the Second World War is written up as a Jewish genocide when it was a Gentile genocide. 1 million Jews died, but 49 million Gentiles died.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Jews own the media, it's all focused on them. Like 26 million Russians died in the Second World War, and there's no big deal made of that. But only 1 million Jews died, and there's a huge deal made of that. So, the whole thing's a con, and it's all out of step. And it's out of step because the Jews are essentially the international bankers, and they run the media, and they also run MPAD, Money, Pedophilia, Arms, and Drugs. And that's how the world is controlled. And everything else beyond that is not real politic, it's just front politic.
Often it's pointed out that's only a small part of the people who are Jewish, that is the so-called Jews. That basically Israel is a victim itself of this policy. Israel is a bankrupt state, a pawn in the hand of the bank.
Yeah, well, actually, every country in the world is bankrupt for the bank. And most countries are bankrupt many times over. Like America has been bankrupt virtually at the end of every war. And as soon as America goes bankrupt, the human population becomes more of a chattel to the bank. And chattel also translates as cattle, and goyim, cattle to be milked. And the war drafts are not a government war draft, they're a bank draft. And the Vietnam War wasn't a government draft, it was a bank draft.
Mm-hmm.
So when we discuss politics and ideology, I've got this saying, ideology's for wankers, and the only thing that counts is the agenda. And you have to understand what the agenda is, and all discussions on ideology are absolutely fruitless.
Yeah.
See, the agenda is to create socialism for the masses, and fascism for the oligarchy. So we've got communist masses all working and paying our taxes so that, the sick can live, etc. And then the oligarchy and the industrialists just cream everything off the top. They become super rich. And at the end of our life, we're lucky if we own a house.
Right.
That's basically what's been set up from the end of the Second World War. You can trace all of our history now back to the Second World War and what happened. But because Hitler was a British agent, his death at the end of the war was fake. And he was brought out of Berlin in a Lysander 3A, serial number V9367, with Ian Fleming.
Ian Fleming of British Intelligence, who wrote the James Bond books.
Yeah, and after the war, he got drunk for 8 years and got massively in debt. And then his bank manager said, look, the only way you're going to get out of debt is to write books. So he wrote Casino Royale and went from there. And then died soon after, actually. I think he died in 63. So he only wrote books for about 4 years.
Right, right. That's the meat of your book, Greg. And of course, I can only recommend to people to get a copy of the book and to read it. We should talk about the content, of course. But
we'll get into that. I want, like, for instance, go ahead, Stefan. I had a couple of things I wanted to point out about the book that's just great. But go ahead.
I wanted to mention. I think I mentioned it in my email to you too. There's this German Hitler historian, he died this year, Joachim Fest. I guess maybe you've heard of him, Joachim Fest.
He died this year, did he?
He died this year, that's right. He wrote the, I think, the thickest Hitler biography in the 1970s.
It was called Hitler, wasn't it?
About Hitler, Adolf Hitler.
That was
a groundbreaking historical work.
Yeah.
Very conservative approach, of course.
Yeah.
Mentioning
yeah.
nothing about Hitler being a British agent.
Yeah.
Keeping open the question whether he was a Rothschild, saying yeah. it cannot be documented. It could be documented today, by the way, as far as I know, if historians had the wish, hypothetically, which obviously they don't have, to run a genetic test of the existing body parts, skin scraps, whatever, of Adolf Hitler on various miscellany. But to my knowledge, that is a no-no, and that's the only reason why this thesis has not been verified yet. So that's
Hitler had so many doubles. He had so many body doubles that you would have to make sure that you had a skin sample of someone who wasn't his body double, and that would be difficult.
That would be difficult, you say?
Yeah.
How many body doubles do you estimate Hitler had?
He had at least 16 and up to 18.
16?
No, sorry, he had at least 6. He had at least 6 and up to 18.
Up to 18?
Yeah.
You know, that confirms with what I've heard from over the years from people in North America who were in the intelligence business and were in the OSS during the war. I don't know if you ever heard of Dr. Beter. He's now deceased, but Dr. Beter was in with OSS during the war, and he always claimed that he was aware of the fact that Hitler had at least half a dozen body doubles. I think he wrote about it as well and talked about it on his tapes. One of the things I wanted to ask was, could you, first of all, it's really interesting the way Hitler had over 700,000 Allied troops cornered, and he could have wiped them out and won the war, and he chose to let them get away. I find that to be a really, really interesting episode that for me, really finalizes where Hitler was and where he stood. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? You go through it in the book.
Yeah,
Dunkirk.
Can I throw in the dates? I made a note of that.
Yeah.
That was in 1940 in Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, yeah.
300,000 British soldiers were cornered in a part of the coastland, and mysteriously, Hitler ordered the German tanks, the Panzers, to halt for 3 days from May 24 to May 26, 1940. And most historians agree, even though they're hesitant to talk about hypothetical history, that if Hitler had not halted the Panzers, the British would have been destroyed in military terms. And that was noted, of course, by the German generals. They kept mocking and moaning and complaining. Hitler the Großfatz, that's a German abbreviation, größter Feldherr aller Zeiten, greatest field marshal of all times, in a mocking sense, because Hitler kept stepping in inexplicably with wacky, wild military orders that brought every plan of the German generals to a downfall. That
yeah.
was very well known at the time.
Yeah.
And that is nothing speculative and nothing new. However, the explanation, the proper explanation, seems to be exactly what you're saying, Craig. Hitler was a British agent.
Absolutely. Yep. There were 335,000 allies who were not killed or taken prisoner on those days, and it all went down between the 19th of May and the 4th of June 1940. And it was blamed on a misinterpretation of what Goering said to his staff and a whole lot of other things and any minor thing. But the object of World War II was to extend the war for as long as possible and kill as many Gentiles as possible, that is, non-Jews.
Right.
And they killed 49 million So it was a massive occult hit. And Hitler was well into the occult, and the Illuminati is an occult movement. And it's a movement based around war and financial profit from that war, and then basically dictating to every government in the world, as every government in the world is bankrupt, what their policies will be and who and how many they will send to war. And there's another factor in war that the Jewish bankers have arranged, which extends every war, and that is that the winner of the war has to pay the loser of the war its war reparations. So at the end of the Cold War, when America supposedly won, they had to pay Russia $60 billion. So we've had the same with Britain in World War One. They had to pay out to Germany, and that virtually bankrupted England. And then the British were quite pissed off that they had won the war, and financially, and the Germans didn't want to win the war. So the war went on and on and on when it could have stopped after 9 months. And when Hitler was trained, he was trained that the war would go on for 9 to 18 months. And at 18 months and one day into the war, Hitler tried to commit suicide. It was the 10th March 1941.
Say that again. What? March what?
10th of March 1941.
March 10th, 1941. Okay.
He tried to commit suicide because the war had gone on for 18 months and one day, and he was only trained into the war for 18 months.
Right.
It was only supposed to go on for 9 to 18 months. And the first 9 months of the war was a fake war. It was just, it was called the phony war. It was just happening out at sea. And it was pretty much a war that people were trying not to start. But because of all the double agent machinations, including Winston Churchill, it got going. Became the biggest war ever. But the number of dead is quite interesting. Like in World War One, about 10 million died, and then in the last 4 months of the war, another 40 million died of the Spanish flu, which was a British creation, blamed on the Spanish because it killed the Spanish the most first. And then we had the same number of deaths in World War II, so it's almost like a target amount. You know, let's try and kill 50 million people, and we'll stop the war as soon as we've killed 50 million. 50 million seems a nice round number, but they did in both wars.
Do you want to say a little bit about the training Hitler received while he was in England? And
he was trained in Tavistock. And Tavistock didn't officially form until 1946, but it was definitely going in 1921 when the Baron Rothschild gave the land at 120 Belsize Lane in London for Tavistock. And prior to that, it was a collection of 500 years of military psychological training and was based both in London and in Ireland. The Tavistock in Ireland closed down after the Irish Civil War, and then moved to London and to St. Petersburg and to Kishgard in Russia, the more southeastern Russia near Vladivostok, I think. And that Tavistock has been used to train double agent leaders all around the world ever since. And Adolf Hitler was trained from February to November 1912 the Irish school. And then after that, he lived in Liverpool for 6 months and lived with his half-brother and sister-in-law. And those were his missing 2 years.
Is that... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yep.
There is mention of Hitler's stay in England in the memoirs of his sister-in-law, I believe.
Yeah,
that's something that so-called academic historians simply ignore because they falsify history actively.
Well, academic historians who teach at university are pretty much a complete and utter and total waste of time. Like the ones here in Auckland were absolutely backing Chairman Mao when he was going through his killing of 70 million people. they were a complete bunch of socialists, and they would say anything that the international bankers wanted them to say.
Right.
So now the lecturers at university here are just a bunch of sexual deviants, completely compromised, who propagandize the next generation into accepting communism as standard. So we've got completely sexually compromised government and academic force in New Zealand and judiciary.
Mm.
And that's similar to the whole Western world. Like, we've got a lesbian prime minister, Helen Clark, and she's married to a homosexual child sex abuser, Peter Davis. And on the 7th of June this year, 2006, he was arrested in a toilet in San Francisco Airport for sexually abusing a Mexican boy who turned out to be a San Francisco police officer in an undercover operation. So Helen Clark underwent the stress of not answering any questions for 3 weeks and then lived in a cave for 2 weeks. You know, people gave her time off because she's tired from all the lying and cover-ups.
Now, Greg...
So when you,
Greg, just...
It's a modern-day parallel, having
yeah.
sexually compromised politicians leading countries. Like, Helen Clark's KGB trained. She's trained in the Tavistock in St. Petersburg. And her training is very similar to Hitler's. And that is pulling someone out of a country who's disgruntled and then training them through the Tavistock training into, in her case, Soviet policy, then sending them back to New Zealand and then promoting them up the political ladder until they're the leader, and then bringing all the Soviet policies into New Zealand and taking over the country via policy. And that's the same thing that Hitler was trained to do. So the cycles...
Grim subject, Greg, just a bit of levity, if I may interrupt with that. So people don't fall unconscious or so. Do you get a degree if you study at this at Tavistock?
Yeah.
It's psychological manipulation training.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any acknowledgement.
No diploma or so.
If people know you're trained there, it's a secret. So it's almost a state secret. Like, this has gone on and on and on. Like, our previous double agent Prime Minister, Robert Muldoon, was trained in Tavistock in London from 1945 to 47. And he destroyed New Zealand and bankrupted it on behalf of the bank. Hitler's training was the same. Stalin's training was the same. Stalin trained in Tavistock in London from April 1907 to January 1911. And he was Churchill's pet. The whole Sydney Street siege that went down on the 2nd of January 1911 was a training exercise between Churchill and Stalin. And Churchill and Stalin were related. They were both Rothschilds.
Oh, that's interesting. They both are Rothschilds.
Yeah, Churchill was a Rothschild.
Uh-huh. Now, let's get into a couple of things about back to Hitler and how he managed to get to Spain. And in your second edition, maybe you could go, I've read the first. I'm just wondering what added information is there in the second that that we can talk about that's new information for those who have read your book?
I've got a... It's about 30% bigger. I've got a whole new chapter called Crashing the Duke of Kent, which is 70 pages long.
Uh-huh.
And I've got another appendix, which is called Was Wallace Simpson a Man? And it's about androgen insensitivity syndrome. And it's about how transgender people are created from birth. And they can have both genders, both in physical characteristics and in genitalia, and the different qualities of the different people. And it appears that Wallace Simpson was androgen insensitivity syndrome, which is called AIS grade 5, and King Edward VIII was AIS grade 3. Basically meant he was non-functioning as a breeding male.
Mm-hmm. Later he ran the filling stations on the Bahamas for the Nazi submarines.
He did. He was a complete Nazi. A lot of the British royals...
Well, at Battenberg, they're Nazis. If you ask Britishers in the street today, many of them say they're governed by Nazis to this day.
The Britishers are?
Well, people in the streets say that. I've heard it.
Yeah, just to clarify, Stefan, you're saying people in the streets in Germany claim that the British...
No, in England.
Oh, in England. I see.
In England.
Yeah.
In London.
Has anyone heard any information that Tony Blair is the brother of Prince Andrew?
No.
Yeah, would that be a half-brother, you mean? Half-brother?
Yeah, half-brother, yeah.
Well, one thing's for sure, I haven't ever heard anything about that, but I do know from reporters that have been very close to his entourage that over the years he had many, many women and affairs. So certainly I wouldn't be surprised if he has some offspring somewhere out there.
Yep. Winston Churchill was half royal. He was King Edward VII's son.
Uh-huh.
With Jenny Jerome. Jenny Jerome was an absolute tart. She's a total flirt.
Now, let's get back. Hitler's travels to Spain he's living out his life in Spain. Do you want to maybe say a little bit about that? I think people are interested in how he got out.
Yeah, well, probably, the most important aspect of the book is Operation Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh,
which was
yeah.
an operation attached to Operation James Bond, which was written up by Chris Crichton. And Chris Crichton was the second commander of Operation James Bond when he was just 21. And he was a real James Bond. He began killing at 15 and a half years old on a bicycle with a well-rod pistol traveling from Britain over to Germany. So Operation James Bond was to remove Martin Bormann out of Berlin, which they did successfully. And within 30 hours, they'd also removed Hitler out of Berlin. Operation James Bond took Martin Bormann back to England and gave him plastic surgery. And Desmond Morton, M from like James Bond, took the Martin Bormann with plastic surgery to the Nuremberg trials to watch his own trial in absentia and watch his own conviction in absentia. And he eventually went to Paraguay and died in Paraguay in 1957. And then his remains were taken back to a park in Berlin, the Fairground. And attached to that whole operation was Operation Winnie the Pooh, which was to take Adolf Hitler out of Berlin. And Adolf Hitler was in the bunker, and he escaped through the tunnels into a WK-202 submarine. And then flares were let off. The tunnels were flooded first, and the tunnels were being used as a hospital. So all the drowned bodies were let out of the tunnel, and they flowed down the River Spree before Hitler in a submarine. And then the British and Russians both let off flares from 5 to midnight on the 1st of May, 30th of April, actually. And the submarine went down to Lake Havel and waited up there for a day and a half. And then his pilot... his female pilot, just trying to remember her name, she Hannah Reich, she picked him up in a Junkers Ju-52 3M-14GE, which is essentially a hot rod plane. It was a very old model plane that had all of the gizmos attached, extra armor plating for the pilot and extra guns and a typewriter. And it picked up Hitler. The submarine rose up. So the conning tower went under the seaplane, and then Hitler and Eva Braun got up into the belly of the plane, and then the plane flew from Lake Havel in southwest Berlin to Lake Müggelsee in northeast Berlin. And then they were met on a launch by Ian Fleming and Carolyn Saunders, and various documents of the Swiss bank accounts passed over, some full numbers, some half numbers. And then they were taken, the launch was beached, and then they jumped on a Westland Lysander 3A, serial number V9673. And then they were flown to Barcelona and met by Ramon Serrano Spooner, who was the former 2IC of General Franco. And then he lived in Barcelona at the Parc du Citadella and at the Montserrat Monastery with Eva Braun. And he was eventually discovered in 1950 on New Year's Day. An Irish billet was going for a walk, and he met Hitler, who was known as the German gardener, who's taking care of the roses. They spoke about the roses. Hitler spoke in English. the Irish cadet then told his sergeant that he had met Hitler and spoken to him in English, and he was pistol whipped for his troubles. And then Hitler became more of a risk than a reward, and Spanish intelligence got hold of British intelligence, and radioactive plates were inserted in Hitler's mattress, and he died 6 weeks later of stomach cancer on the 19th of February, 1950. That's how it went down. That's the missing part of history.
Is there any is there any record of anything he's Hitler wrote after the war at all, do you think? Do you think that'll surface someday, anything that he wrote?
If it surfaces publicly for the masses, you can guarantee that it will be fake.
Okay.
Like it's the 17 levels above top secret, and Hitler's information is above access to like the top ranks of the UN, for example. It's basically, you know, buried and hidden and coded. I've listed some of the codes and access files in the book. But from the first edition we wrote, we got feedback, I've got it on the back cover, actually. Former MI6 chief, this book was written by a genius. And we got feedback from other sources, from quotes we'd put in the book, that we'd got them right. And they were quotes to do with Britain's Tavistock training file on Hitler. So the whole thing's been a massive fishing exercise that's gone on for about 30 years.
Yeah. Greg, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The question is, to your knowledge, what files are there in existence about this?
It's actually listed in the book. I give the file, I just have to find it. The new book's 550 pages, so...
I have only the first edition, which I wanted, though, too.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. It would be difficult for me to find it right now, but I've listed the file number, where his file is. It's basically on permanent loan to the Home Office.
Okay, fine. Anyway, it's in the new edition.
It's in the new edition. That's okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's in both editions. It's in both editions. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the file is in the Public Record Office in Britain, and it's on permanent loan to the Home Office, which means you can't access it, and there's also a Swiss file number on them. And I've listed the Swiss file number.
Now, I see that you have, it's alleged by people who've written about you that you have close ties with Mountbatten and Ribbentrop. Is that accurate?
That I have close ties?
Yeah.
Personally?
Well, I don't think personally means professionally, I guess.
No, I've got no ties with them.
I'm sorry. No. You know what? I'm sorry. That's. You know what? Strike that. That's a report on another book. I am sorry. I'll take that out anyway. We're editing. I'll take that out. I want to go back. So Hitler moved to was taken to Spain, and Bormann was taken away,
yeah,
and escaped. And is there any evidence about Goebbels and the Doctor of Death that you can talk about? Mengele. What about those guys? Did they fake? Did Goebbels fake his death, or was that a real? Was he really? Did he suicide his family, as it's alleged?
Yeah, he was what made the Berlin bunker look real. Like, they found five Hitler doppelgangers dead on top of the bunker. They found another Hitler doppelganger dead inside the bunker, and then they didn't find Hitler. And the American and British intelligence at the time were reporting, including the U.S. president, were reporting that they believed that they had not found Hitler in the bunker. So Mengele, I can't comment on, but Goebbels' deaths were real.
Were real.
And Magda Goebbels' death was real, and the six children's death was real.
Okay.
And virtually everything else in the bunker was fake.
Mm-hmm. If I remember right, there was a trial against Hermann Göring, and he was convicted and, I believe, executed. He was the one they got. Is that correct, or was that a fake?
Well, Göring was a British agent. He was building Caron Hall, and he was running out of money. And the British offered to finish off Caron Hall, and in exchange they bugged it. So all of the German high command meetings, or a lot of the German high command meetings and international meetings, were held in Caron Hall, and the British had it totally bugged. And Göring was a British agent. He even attended the coronation of King George VI. And he was completely accepted by MI6. So the whole thing, the whole build-up to World War II was a British and German build-up together. They call each other cousins. And all of the higher command had their equal and opposite phone numbers in Britain and Germany. And the British and Germans had stolen each other's planes, or been given each other's planes, and were flying to each other's countries. Like the Germans were flying to Britain in British planes, and British MI6 were trained to fly German planes, and were flying German planes into Britain and to neutral countries. So they were having secret meetings all of the time, right through the war. And in the second edition of Put Up Arguments, and showing photos of locations where Churchill and Hitler met during World War II.
Yeah. I saw you have a very impressive chapter there on Pearl Harbor and how it was, what was it, 16 years in the making?
Yeah. The guy's name was Bywater, Hector C. Bywater, and he wrote the plan to attack Pearl Harbor for the British.
Right.
And then had
that's the one that was read by everybody, basically, because he had what did you say, more knowledge of fleets than a room full of admirals.
Yeah. He was basically a naval genius, and he sold the plans for Pearl Harbor, or virtually gave the plans for Pearl Harbor to the Japanese, to Admiral Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. Then the Germans enacted Pearl Harbor against the Americans with Churchill and Roosevelt. Total complicity. Like, Japan could not have successfully attacked Pearl Harbor without Churchill and Roosevelt interference in making an absolute pathway for them. Like, when the Japanese fleet took 9 days to travel from Japan to Hawaii, there were no other ships in sight, either military ships or merchant ships.
Another military stand down.
It was a total military stand down. And
you have many specifics about that in the chapter, and this is by far not all that we're going through here. I just want to mention that.
Yeah. So Roosevelt was also a double agent president, as was Churchill, as was Hitler, as was Stalin. They were all Jews, either quarter half or three quarter Jews, and they were all acting for the international bankers to profit them. And to create the state of Israel, which Germany is still paying for, and it shouldn't be. Israel has been a massive con, absolutely massive con.
There's one figure in Hitler's biography who I find interesting. He's the one person reportedly who worked both for Hitler and for Roosevelt. It's this Ernst Cedric Hanfstengel. They say he was an early friend of Hitler, then he was the press speaker, he helped in the financing, as did, by the way, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of this president, present non-president George W. Bush.
Yeah.
A lot of the funding, or some of the funding came from Germany, but a lot of the funding for Hitler came from the Anglo-American banking system. And this Cedric, was he just a friend, or was he one of the intelligence controllers of Hitler? Do you have any information about that?
A lot of the runners in between were part Rothschilds. And they even had surnames like Roth or Child. And they were just runners in between for the banks, ensuring that the war went ahead. Because the war was a business and a business opportunity and a business project, like as we might say, as architects build a building, then the international bankers will be the architects.
Building a building or blowing it up, as we've seen now, too.
Yeah, Smedley Butler said war is a racket. That was his book.
It's absolutely a racket. And, you know, that we have a government draft is amazing in itself. But, you know, when the population realizes that it's actually a bank draft and not a government draft, then you realize that all of the governments are acting treasonously, and they're treating their human population as chattels owned to the bank, owed to the bank. You see what I'm saying? You get that?
Yeah, well.
Yeah,
absolutely, it's a chattel owned by the bank.
Yeah, we are chattels owned by the bank, and all governments are bankrupt. The American government was bankrupt at the end of the Civil War in 1865, and it was bankrupt again at the end of Lend-Lease in 1945. And every time that the government or country goes bankrupt, the requirements of the chattels, which is the next generation, are increased, and the banks freely send them to war. It's like the Vietnam War wasn't particularly about anything. Yet, you know, millions of people got sent there and millions died. And the banks made huge profits. And the countries were in massive war debt again. And then the winners of the war have to pay the losers of the war debt, so that once the war starts, no one wants to stop them.
On the back cover of the first edition, you've got a letter to the Queen, I believe.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear back at all from them?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard from them.
Lenny, they were probably too busy planning the next war.
Yep.
Now, Greg, do you think at some point this will ever make mainstream media? Have you gotten close to mainstream media with your interviews at all?
I've had one interview on TV, but it was a spoof program. And when you introduce the truth, the way to introduce it is through either flaky media, like, you know, the small Sunday papers with comic strips.
Yeah.
Or through spoof programs.
Satire.
The information still lodges in people's heads.
Right.
But the mainstream media in New Zealand is completely compromised. The media people are, New Zealand media is essentially a child sex abuse and child drug movement, and the people in the media, 4 out of 5 TV executives are homosexuals. And people who run the media are drug users and pedophiles and lesbians and homosexuals. It's absolutely chronic.
Have you ever have you ever gotten to Spain to visit where Hitler did live out the...
No, that was one place I didn't get to. It would be nice if the mainstream media picked it up, but and it would be nice if, say, Oxford University picked it up and ran with it, but what I'm expecting to happen is they'll actually stop lecturing history about Hitler. And that's already happened in New Zealand. Like, if you do a degree in history in New Zealand, there's only one paper on the Second World War in 3 years. And you do maybe 12 papers a year, 12 or 18 papers a year. So, you know, they're already not teaching the Second World War in New Zealand.
Now, what about in Germany? A question for Stefan. Stefan, do you think in Germany this would have a monumental effect if it were to become public knowledge? If.
I'm told that this this report, which I believe is correct, of a specific shadow government, a hangover of the old Reich, if that becomes known, that could have consequences. It's also said it's classified, highly classified information, and well, whatever.
No, what about
they? What about, they say not to disclose it, but at some point I guess it has to be.
What about your book, Greg? Is it banned, formally banned? Are you aware of any banning of it in any way, or are they just trying to behind the scenes drag its feet?
Yeah, it's called gray listing.
Gray
listing. They blacklist a book, it makes it famous, and people will beat a path to your door and want to buy it.
Right.
So the official way now is that governments, universities, and the libraries and the media ignore it.
Yeah.
And if a library is forced to buy it by someone saying, please get this book, they'll buy it and they'll lend it to that one person, and then they'll stick it on the back shelf somewhere down the basement, you know. Or they'll say, no, it's out when it's not.
Yeah.
All sorts of machinations like that. And the other thing they try and do is they lodge it under fiction.
Yeah.
And the other thing they do is when they sell off old books, they sell the new books that they don't want. And then what they do is they say, oh, yes, your book is not being taken out, so we won't buy any more. There's every sort of trick.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very tiring. And then there's, you know, computer sabotage and telephone sabotage and car sabotage and called boilerplating harassment and then harassment through the court. Like, I haven't been able to have any evidence heard in court in New Zealand since 1994.
Are there any persons alive today that you're aware of, they'd be old, who... knew Hitler and would be able to identify him were he alive?
I met one James Bond. Like, the James Bond is a category.
Is that Blunt?
No.
Not
Blunt. I met a James Bond here in New Zealand.
Okay.
And he was assigned to kill Hitler in Levin, which is about an hour north of Wellington, the capital, in February 1994. And... he was given £1,000 up and another £1,000 to when he'd done the job. And the person that he was doing the job with, his accomplice, was Tom Stanford, who was the cook for Noel Coward. And he was one of the guys who bashed the gong on the J. Arthur Rank movies.
Uh-huh.
So they went up to Levin and checked out this Hitler, who was... supposedly running a menswear store, and he looked exactly like Hitler, and he was in his mid-50s, but by then Hitler should have been in his 70s. So they wondered what to do. They didn't kill him. and they went back and told the Jewish guy who'd financed them that they'd done the job and they got the extra £2,000, which was the price of a house in those days. And the whole scenario, the whole ordering of the whole mission was set up by MI6.
Mm-hmm.
As myth building. So that's the closest we got.
Stefan, did you have? Did you want to take the floor? Go ahead.
All the questions I have left is we have a regular participant. His name is Eric Phelps. He's a 20-year into research into the Jesuits, and he's picked up trails that Hitler was, and Stalin, by the way, that they were a product of this Jesuit Vatican organization. Would you have any comment on that?
He was as well. It gets very confusing because what the international, if you put the international bankers up the top and then subgroups below that, they have like the pro-Jew thing and then the pro-Catholic thing, and they have a whole lot of psychological training, and they get their own agents to act as enemies and to appear as enemies to the public, and then they train people and build up contacts within those organizations. And the Jesuit Catholic organization was used as the rat line for the Nazis escaping to South America, which they did incredibly successfully.
So
you've got traditional enemies through history, but a lot of them are actually working together and in contact together, and it's the public that's made to think that they're enemies. So that they will fight for one or other side. And the object of the banks is war. The war draft is a bank draft.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I don't have any other specific questions other than to thank you for writing the book and appearing on our briefing with us.
It's a wonderful book.
It's a terrific book, and I suggest everybody order it and get it. It's available at HitlerWasABritishAgent.com. Is that it again?
That's it, yep.
And is there a third edition in the works with more information after the second? Are you continuing your path on this?
There's another book of the same size that I'm working on. So what's available now is the second edition of Hitler Was a British Agent.
Yes.
And it is 550 pages long, about 200 photographs. And I've got another book coming out which backs everything up further. It goes back to 1625 in Europe and runs the right history right through and expands on Pearl Harbor and brings you up to pretty much the 1960s.
And what can you say about what can we learn about today from understanding the subterfuge of the past?
You have to know the agenda. Don't look for ideology. That's just a total waste of time. You have to look for the agenda, and the agenda is a fascist, financially rich oligarchy and communism for the masses. And our tax rate in Western countries is now, in real terms, 75% and up. And virtually 98% of the information we get is a con, and you have to read what is virtually rare book and unpromoted book and non-mainstream histories and media to understand what's really going on. And once you understand what's going on, you can predict the future. And once you can predict the future, you can start playing a part in it.
What could you say about 9/11 and what's happening next in America that you foresee happening?
Well, a lot of our prime ministers and presidents are double agents. And George W. Bush is a double agent president of America.
Right.
And George H.W. Bush and George Herbert Bush organized.
Is George Bush a British agent?
No, he's a double agent. He's a shadow world government agent.
Okay.
And George W. Bush and George Herbert Bush ran the attacks on the Twin Towers in conjunction with various and many Israeli intelligence organizations. And what hit the buildings were two radio-controlled American military E-10 planes with nobody on board. And a lot of the people who were supposedly passengers in the planes have turned up alive. At least 9 out of the 15 supposed Saudi Arabian assassins on the planes have phoned in saying, can I have my passport back, please? And they did not have the flight experience to land such large planes on such a small location as a building. And then the third Twin Towers building, the one that was about 8 stories
building
high.
Building 7.
Building 7 collapsed, collapsed about 7 hours later.
Yeah.
And Silverstein has admitted that that was controlled demolition, but he didn't exactly warn people to get out of the building. You know, and the whole thing was a massive gold theft. The FBI security was actually in the Twin Towers building at the time that they collapsed, investigating massive financial computer fraud of billions of dollars, and all of the gold was taken out of the bottom of the Twin Towers buildings except for the last truckload. So it was a massive theft, and all wars begin and end on massive gold thefts, and that was an attempt to create a third world war. And Osama bin Laden is, he went to school, public school in Britain. He was known as Harry bin Laden, and very nice chap. And he became an American agent. He's a CIA agent, and his code name is Tim Osman. And Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein was an American agent. He was trained and ran in the 1950s by George Herbert Bush. And George Herbert Bush had Saddam Hussein, as a young man, on roller skates, skating around Iraq, and any peace vehicles and limousines he saw, he was instructed to attach a turtle bomb onto the petrol cap and then twist it, and then that would shoot a flame into the petrol tank and blow up the plane and therefore the peacemakers. So, yeah, Saddam Hussein's long been an American agent.
So where do you see the agenda taking them from here?
Well, the agenda has been to, the agenda at the moment is to create war in any country where there is oil so that the oil price will go up. And the oil prices are fixed internationally, and you have to sell your oil at that price. You're not allowed to sell it cheaper. And if you try to sell your oil cheaper than what they state you can, then your oil company or your garage is closed down. And that's happened in New Zealand. People were trying to sell petrol for $1 a litre, and they were closed down and moved on. So, you know, it's war for an increased oil price. And America is an oil-based economy, and it only rules the world when it has oil, and it is, it's in the mistaken belief that oil is running out, and it's also in the mistaken belief that oil is a fossil fuel, and oil is not a fossil fuel. We did not have 10 trillion dinosaurs dying in one spot. That is a joke.
That's what geophysicists say.
Yeah, there's been reports of Canadian scientists years ago saying oil was a microbe, and they found oil microbes, and they almost talked about it as if it's like the sweat of the earth. It oozes out of the core.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's,
I'll tell you what. I've written 10 books, so I'll give you some advance on volume 10. Oil is a product of the interaction between the sun and the earth.
Right. So it's, so basically, we're all agreed that it's a renewable resource, and therefore the true supply curve, were it to shift to the real supply curve, would put it even in today's terms down about a penny a barrel.
Yeah, oil should basically be
free. Yeah.
It should be free.
Yeah.
And it is being used as an excuse for war. I've got this in the second edition. It's being used as an excuse for war, and it is another piece of information that is being used for war, for the international bankers to profit from war. There is no fight for oil. There is no shortage of oil. It is just war to increase the price of oil under the guise that there is a shortage. There is no shortage. There is an abundance.
Yes, certainly what echoes what we've been saying here at Cloak and Dagger. And, Greg, I just want to say that we can't thank you enough for coming on and briefing us on your book. Certainly are going to get, I'm going to get the second edition from you now that it's 30% more in there. I'm anxious to read it and certainly recommend it to all our listeners. And certainly look forward to having you back more often. Bringing your treasury of wisdom and knowledge onto our show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yep, I can second that. It's great that somebody is speaking up. You're doing it, and you have the background and the knowledge.
By the way, has your
many book, thanks for your efforts, Greg.
Has your book been translated into German at all, Greg?
No, it hasn't.
It's only in English, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen if it was translated and sold in Germany. That would be an interesting sale.
Well, you know, I'm looking for a publisher in Germany.
Well, you want it in print, I suppose, not electronic. Electronics has a disadvantage because inevitably these things get posted for free at some point.
Yeah.
Well, hard copy is really more satisfying than anything.
The main problem coming from New Zealand, which is about as far away as you can get, is that half the cost of the book goes into postage.
Yes, right. Yeah, because of the size.
Yeah, well, it's a 1 kilogram book.
Uh-huh. It's a 1 kiloton book. If that book ever got out, it would just really blow things up.
What did you call it? Hitler war ein britischer Agent. Well, that's easy to translate.
Yeah.
I'm a translator too.
There we
go.
Oh,
good. Oh well, I'll have to send you another the new edition.
Well, we want to thank you and
let's talk about that later, Greg.
Yeah, stay on the line. We'll certainly go into that. But I just wanted for our audience, I'm sure they're anxious to get your book and read it. Our audience is aware that history is bunk, as Henry Ford said, and it's revised, and history is written by the winners, and you've got to find out what the losers have to say and then put those two things together, and in between the lines, reading between the lines, you'll get some view of what was really going on.
In between the pipelines, Lenny.
In between the pipelines. Read between the pipelines.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. But, Greg, thanks for bringing us your treasury of wisdom and knowledge on the Cloak and Dagger, and we look forward to having you back real soon with further updates about both the past and what you're discovering about what's really happened in the past, and projecting as to what is going to happen in the future.
Very good. Thank you.
God bless you, and we'll speak to you again soon.
God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.